begin with, I just feel like saying something about myself and my own journey and where I am now and what I'm interested in as a sort of preamble, as a context for what we might talk about, because there's thousands of things we could talk about, but just to sort of have a focus to the conversation. My own journey, spiritual journey, really began way back 50 years ago in the 60s. I was a child of the 60s with all that means, and discovered TM, Transcendental Meditation, and went off to India and lived with the Maharishi and had my own deep initiation into Advaita Vedanta. It wasn't called non-duality then, but it was, that's what it was. He was a great non-dual teacher, didn't use that language. But that became a real foundation for me. That time with him and over the years with him was a real foundation in my own understanding, appreciation, experiences that has never left me. And I would still say 50% of what I have to say today came out of those very formative years in India with the Maharishi. And then things moved on. I got thrown out of the TM movement, as did Deepak, for speaking in our own truth. It had become a church, and churches have their own particular way of seeing the world, and my way was more open. Anyway, and my interest moved much more to a planetary point of view, and I got very interested in the whole notion of Gaia, the living organism, and how we fitted into Gaia. And I wrote the book which I became most well known for, The Global Brain, which was really about, on the surface, it was about where computers were going. And this is before the internet actually existed, but where I saw computers are going. So I was actually closely involved with the early networking of computers, and I saw that that was going to be a really significant thing for the future of humanity. But the real agenda in the book was, will this become a sane global brain or an insane global brain? And to become a sane global brain, there had to be a widespread shift in consciousness. So I was really arguing for a widespread shift in consciousness from a planetary perspective, and that was very much part of my thinking for several decades. And moving on more, always throughout my life there's been this fascination with accelerating change, exponential growth. As a young mathematician, that was my background, was mathematics, I saw the implications of the exponential curve, which people find very hard to grasp. But that's a whole other story I'm not going to get into today. And then got really interested in science and consciousness and quantum physics and that, and the whole relationship between quantum physics and consciousness. And that's what a lot of you may know me for over the years, and written books on that, spoken on that at these conferences many times. And 2 years ago, just had this sort of negative epiphany, which was, what do I know? What do I know? It's like, I can come up with all these wonderful ideas, I can argue my point of view, I can argue, you know, I think Stuart's wrong on this account, and can argue against Stuart on this, and I can, you know, and it was all very convincing. I was convincing myself that I was right. I just thought, this whole thing is just another ego game. And so I dropped it. Haven't spoken about that ever since. Just drop that out of my life. And realizing I've come right back to where I started, which is the important thing is how do we as individuals awaken? That's what it's all about. We can talk to the cows come home about the philosophy of absolute and relative and what is non-duality and quantum physics and this metaphysics and that metaphysics. And it's all very interesting. And we can get seduced by it and think we know a lot. But the real knowing that's required of us at this time, from which everything else unfolds, is the knowing of ourself. And the stepping back from that personal self, which gets us so embroiled in life in ways that are not always productive. And they are seductive and take us off into many different games. How do we let go of all of that to come back to our true nature? Because by coming back to our true nature, what I was talking about briefly yesterday on the main stage, from that comes the knowing how to live our lives. It comes from that connecting with that inner wisdom that I think we all carry, but which gets so veiled by all our thinking and doing and worrying and engagement with the world. We need to step back from that from time to time. As Alan Watts once said, one of my favorite quotes from Alan Watts, he said, at times we have to stop thinking in order to know what to think about. Because otherwise we're just off on a train that takes us from one thought to another thought to another thought to another thought. And we go on and on like that for days on end. We go to sleep and we wake up and continue another thought and this one comes in. It's just like one continual conversation with ourself, and we have to stop in order to actually check in and see what is real for ourselves. And so that's where I've come back to. And I've just produced a new little book called Seeds of Awakening. It's in the bookstore and I'll be signing copies. I think it's at 1:45, but which is like a whole new direction for me, like just coming back to what is the essence of the journey? What is the essence of spiritual awakening? And as I said yesterday, I think all the great spiritual teachers had very similar realizations. That realization of, you know, the true nature, the letting go of the self, the discovery of one's own beingness, however you want to put it, there's something very similar that happened. And they were so taken by it in terms of how it opened them up. They talk about, well, there was this great compassion, this unconditional love, this sense of deep peace, this connection with the divine, whatever it was. That they naturally, the freedom that came from that, they naturally wanted to share it with other people. You don't want to keep that to yourself. Like, I've just had this most wonderful opening. It's like everything has shifted, but I'm not going to tell anybody about it. Yeah. You want to share it with your friends. That's what the Buddha did. He called his four friends together and said, hey, I've got it. And this is what it's about. Da, 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 da. And the friends listen. And the friends get it. Well, they get 90% of it, but because they're not living it, they don't completely get it. But they get most of it. Some of it they don't get, and other bits they sort of misunderstand a bit, but you know, they're okay. And they go off and they teach their friends, and their friends get 90% of it, but not some of it, and misunderstand it. And they go, and they think this is wonderful, and they go and teach it to their people, and they go and teach it to their people, and then it gets translated into another language, and it gets passed on. You end up with the game of Chinese whispers, you know, that party game where you pass a message around the room and it ends up totally different. You do that with a spiritual teaching, you pass it through 20 generations and a few different cultures and mindsets, and you end up with something which is totally the opposite. why it's often said, if Jesus were alive today, or Buddha were alive today, or any of the great teachers were alive today, they'd probably turn in their grave about what was being said about their teachings. So my interest has been always been like distilling down, taking out all these layers that have been added on, all the different metaphysics and the rituals and this and that. What is at the heart of it? What is at the heart of it? And that's what I've come back to. That's my interest. What is at the heart of all this? Which I was saying yesterday, one way for me at the moment is just that word pause, just to pause. Just to withdraw your interest in whatever it is your attention is interested in the moment. Whether it's some story you're following along, listening to some sound or some sensation in the body. Whatever your attention is interested in, just lose interest. Just pause. Just take back the interest and notice what is. And just noticing what is. And then you'll notice the subtle things there, and you just, pause that. And just like layers of pausing. And as you do that, begin to taste the peace, the ease, the gentleness, the openness, the freedom, the relief, whatever it is. And then to begin to savor it and love it. Just to love who we are deep, deep down. So that's where I am at in my journey at the moment. Next year, I shall update you. If I'm here next year. I may not be here next year, who knows? So, given that as a sort of context, let's explore where people want to go, ask, whatever, share. Yeah, Valerie, can we... Please wait for the mic in order to speak, because it's coming. Sorry. Because although you may have a very loud voice and can project so strongly, it doesn't get picked up by this mic, and so it doesn't go on the recording. Having the mic is not for you to project your voice so much, but it's that it goes on the actual recording. So, Valerie.
So when I began my journey, this is my fifth year at SAND, I think in year two, I went to one of your discussions. I think it was a pre-conference, so it was a three-hour thing. Mm-hmm. And I was very new in my journey. And I'm very much in love with my life as a human and was having trouble sort of connecting the two. And I'd asked you a question at this about, how... 'cause the message I was getting from my experience at SAND was to let your life here drop away, and that it was sort of without value. You needed to just concentrate on being with consciousness. And so I had trouble with that message that I was hearing. And so I had asked you a question about, the individual and what does it mean to be me, or does it matter being me? And so with what you just said about sort of going back to the I am, but with the conference being the mystery of being human, how are you relating that now with this new perspective that you have?
And what did I say back then?
That's a good question. You kind of repeated the message that I was hearing, that I needed to just sort of let this drop away.
Let this...
this Valerie sort of drop away. And it wasn't the value, because it wasn't the message I was hearing you so much, but it was that, just that the experience, the true experience was being with, consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, the way I'd phrase it today... It's not getting rid of Valerie at all, or letting Valerie drop away, but being willing to let go of Valerie, to step behind Valerie and to recognize that quality of beingness that's beyond Valerie, that sense of just that sense of, again, what I was talking about yesterday, the amming, or you could call it the I am, just that sense of, here I am, a conscious being who experiences being Valerie and all the stuff that Valerie is into and Valerie thinks and Valerie does, not to change any of that, but instead of being totally caught up with being Valerie, is to know, here I am, playing Valerie and doing that. And the value of that is that when you're just playing the role of Valerie and doing that, you're on a sort of automatic being Valerie. When you can step back into, let's call it true nature, beingness, there's a groundedness there. It's like, here I am. And there's a wisdom in that groundedness. And that wisdom can then begin to influence how Valerie plays in the world. So from that you feel, this is where I am. And maybe that stuff I do, that game, actually doesn't feel so right anymore. And so you make a choice to maybe drop that. Or conversely, it's like, this is really important for me, and this is something that I want to bring into my life more. So you're allowing that connection with true nature to begin to shine through into your life and guide your life.
I like that answer a lot. Thank
you. Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, so it isn't about dropping Valerie, but it's about stepping behind Valerie to that level of just true nature being and allowing that to begin to shine through and help the Valerie-ness become even more wonderful.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Tony?
Hi, Peter. My question is, how can that stepping back help us deal with self-criticism or with regret or making mistakes?
The self that is feeling the criticism or the self that is not feeling safe is what I would call the personality self, the personal self. That's the individual self. That's the Valerie in that case, or the Tony.
The identified self.
Yeah. So that personal self, call it that, may not feel safe. That personal self may feel criticized, because that personal self is engaged in a whole lot of strategies for how to survive. The goal of the personal self, or we could call it the ego, different word, the goal of that personal individual self is to help you get through this world safely for as long as you can. That's its goal, and its whole thinking is about what's good for you, what's safe, where are the threats, what do I need to do? And that individual self can feel vulnerable at times if it's attacked. When you step back from that and come back to just that pure being, true nature, whatever, the true self, that the personal self isn't activating anymore. It's not there. In fact, again, that sense of personal self is actually an idea. It doesn't actually exist. And this is what so many teachers have pointed out. When you go and look for it, all you find are stories, ideas, maybe some feelings, some memories and stuff. It's it doesn't actually have an independent existence outside of your thinking about it, creating it. So you are creating that individual personal self. And we do it so well that for most of the time, most of us live in that creation. That's where we spend most of our life, unfortunately. And that's why we need to find as many ways as we can to temporarily step out of it and taste the, here I am. And that here I am can't feel vulnerable. It's impossible. There's nothing that can threaten it. There's nothing that can threaten that sense of being in itself. It can be covered up. It can be veiled. You can forget about it for 48 hours or 48 years or whatever. You can not be conscious. But it, in itself, it is not vulnerable. It cannot be touched. It cannot in itself be threatened. It cannot be criticized. So the antidote to the vulnerability, the self-criticism, is to leave it behind for a moment. Like, again, pause. Whatever story is going on that, you know, you feel somebody said something and you feel vulnerable and awful, blah, 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 whatever it is, that you've got a story going on that's making you feel self-criticized or whatever. Just say, okay, see the story, withdraw the interest from it, and like, here I am. And then try in the present moment to feel self-criticized without thinking about anything.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ian, behind.
Hi. I'm a little bit concerned, though, that you, because of the ego games, that you did give up the whole consciousness question in vis-a-vis science and philosophy, because I think the stakes are so great. I myself am involved in that, and I see the ego games. There's no doubt they're there.
You see but
the ego games.
Yeah.
It's no doubt they're there. And maybe I succumb to them a little bit myself, but the thing is, the stakes are so high. We have a world, I think, has been taught scientific materialism for several hundred years, and this is the result. Nuclear contamination throughout the world, tearing down rainforests, so on and so forth, people not being as nice to each other as they should be. And I'm thinking that battle's also still relevant. Any thoughts?
Okay, yeah. There's an enormous amount that can be done in the physical world to improve that world, to make it a safer place for the future of the world, for dealing with injustices towards other people. There's numerous, numerous things. And we can't do all of them. And on that, we shouldn't actually get our minds too caught up in doing all of them. You know, we can spend our whole life worrying, well, what am I going to do about the ice floes in Antarctica? And what am I going to do about the famine over here and this and that and this and that? I think as individuals, we are called to do something, to find our own calling, whatever it is, whether it's spiritual activism, you know, working with our social groups, being in an environmental thing, being a political activist. We have our own calling of what feels important to us. And it, to some extent, you know, it matches what our own particular gifts are in terms of communication. And we have our own sphere of influence, which is the people we can directly influence, whether it's just through talking, family, work, community, writing, blogging. There's many ways in which we can influence people. And that's a completely natural motivation, and we should do that as as fully as we want to. So it's not about not doing that. But I would say, if you charge at it, you may not be as effective as if you can pull back and pull back to just that, you know, that basic being, here I am, and from that feel, okay, what is the best use of my time and my resources in doing that? So you're temporarily stepping back from the ego mind, because the thing about the ego mind, it gets really easily fixed on what it thinks is right. And that's its job. That's part of its character. Its job is to keep you safe and keep you surviving. That's its job. And if the ego mind was all wishy-washy, it wouldn't work. Even if the ego mind says, I don't know about jumping off that cliff. You may be okay, you may be not. And that nasty-looking green, moldy food, could be good, could be bad. I'm really haven't made up my mind, whatever it is. Or, you know, the ego mind needs to be, that is bad, that is good. That's its job, is to be convincing, and it remains convinced. And so when you've got something that's moving you, that's motivating you, what the ego mind gets into is, this is the way to do it. I know, this is the way to do it. And there's great value at times of stepping back from that, opening up, and sometimes completely different ways of seeing how to do things can come from doing that. And then the ego mind can get engaged again. It's that thing of the quote I say, you know, from Alan Watts, you need to stop thinking in order to know what to think about. I think it's the same thing here. We need to withdraw our attention from the fixed patterns. And something that I find very useful is a very simple question, which is there another way of looking at this? Which is not, is there something else I need to be doing? If you ask the question, is there something else I need to be doing? The doing is the ego's function. The ego starts thinking, oh yes, what else could I do? And but behind all that is our frame of reference of how we see things. And if we ask the question, and I'd like to just go into a quiet space and just say, is there another way of seeing this? Which is like, is there another mindset from which I could be coming? Sometimes it's quite miraculous what happens. And the other way of seeing almost invariably is one that's coming from a deeper place of understanding, a deeper place of compassion, of wisdom. It's coming from a more peaceful place inside. And usually it carries with it this sort of little bit of, why didn't I think of that before? And the reason I didn't think of it before was because I was so busy thinking about this. So, I don't know, does that touch your question?
Yeah, there are certainly many different ways of dealing with all the issues we have there, and people that are suffering and so forth.
Yeah. So in brief, I'd say, yes, get engaged in the world in whatever way draws you and is something within your scope that you can do. Get engaged in that. And by taking the opportunity here and there to just come back to source, that is going to empower and clarify and influence to the better your ability to go out and do that.
Certainly makes sense.
Okay. Are you next? Well, who's next? No, I'm just wondering who was grabbing the mic next. Camera guy.
Yeah, I just took a bit of time off from my camera duty to ask you a question. So this whole sense of our discussion about awakening and getting behind the materialistic self who's saying this is not enough, I want more opinions, thoughts, feelings. In the real world out there, the bank balance does matter. And so the insecurities that come with the bank balance and the credit card statements exist. And yet, the pull, I mean, I've been coming to this conference for 5 years now, so the pull to really participate in and spread awakening and self-actualization. And I do believe that Maslow's hierarchies are as observed, but they really need to be inverted, like self-actualization will cause. It's very difficult to live that, although conceptually that makes sense. So any direction, advice for someone who wants to be there but finds being in the credit card statement world more often than in the self-actualization world? You know, some advice, direction.
Little steps. Don't get frustrated that you're not where you want to be, because that's just going to add to your mental tension and it's just going to cover up even more your natural being. So you want to avoid things that are going to just increase the tension. So by little steps, I mean, let's take, you know, you mentioned credit card. So you see your credit card bill and it's like, oh shit. And just take, you know, it's like having the reminder, okay, let's just pause here, right now, with this little thing, and just notice what's happening in my body. Just notice what you're feeling, notice what is there, notice the energy, and to just be with it. And usually, just by being with these things, they just begin to soften and dissolve and just stay with it. And as it softens and dissolves, you'll find yourself just coming closer back to that beingness, that essential you. Not in any great big, you know, blissful way. Just, it's like, ah, okay, yes, here I am. There's that whole thing which just got triggered in me. It's like, ah, and here I am. And just that. But just staying with it. And letting it dissolve, and as it dissolves, the veil is the veil that's dissolving. And so you begin to just get more, that little bit more in touch with whatever you want to call it, the non-dual, the transcendent, the other side that you're looking to. But rather than trying to get from here to there, just in that moment, opening up a little bit more to it. And getting on with life, and you'll probably find, you know, in that moment you may actually be able to deal with your that particular credit card bill in a slightly easier, more relaxed way, and then a bit later in the day something else is going to come along and you're going to feel a pinch or a motivation to do something. And just whenever you notice anything like this, and this is the hard part of it. The actual practice is so, so, so easy. It's the easiest thing in the world to just pause and notice. The hardest thing is remembering to. And that's, I think that's partly where, you know, sangha, community, support comes in, finding ways to remember. But it's like if you can somehow set yourself that whenever you notice a twinge, that's, you know, a twinge of the material world getting at you in some way, if you can use that as the trigger to say, pause. What's going on? What am I thinking? What's the thought process here? And then just notice that, and then just let that go. And then what's my body doing? Where's the tension? Ha-ha, just be with that and let it soften and dissolve. We're just coming back. And come back 100,000 times a day. We've got time for maybe one more. Maybe two if it's very short. Or if my answer's very short.
Thank you. I would like to know what your definition or your viewpoint on prayer is and then how it fits in with this whole journey.
We may have to run over. My definition of prayer, you were saying?
Yeah.
And what was the other bit?
Just your perspective on what prayer is and how it is a how it is part of our journey and how to implement it as part of our journey.
Yeah. For me, prayer is actually what I was talking about to the gentleman over here earlier about is there another way of seeing things? That's my prayer. We normally think of prayer as, first of all, an appeal to some higher authority, whether it's whatever, but something else. We're praying to something beyond ourselves in some way. And the prayer, the other element of prayer is there's usually, there's something wrong in the world, and I personally don't have the power to change it, but my prayer is that you, whatever energy, being, can help me change things, whether it's, you know, my own health or someone else's health or a situation in the world or whatever it is. But the basic essence of prayer as it's normally offered in the conventional way is appealing to some or other higher power or energy to help you get the world the way you'd like it to be. That's the sort of breakdown. For me, the problem, the root of the problem is not what's in the world, but it's the way I see the world, the way I'm perceiving it. And where I need divine intervention, I don't need divine intervention out there, I need divine intervention in here. That's where I need divine intervention, in my thinking, my perception. And so my prayer is, what I was saying earlier, my prayer is when I'm faced with some challenging situation where I would like guidance, where I would like help, or I would like something to change, is to pause and then get in touch with the quality of gratitude. Find some way just to think of something I'm grateful for. Doesn't matter what, but just to think of something that I'm grateful for. And by using that, to then use that as a trigger to just feel gratitude in my heart, which is in most prayer, you know, thanks, most, how many prayers begin, thanks be to God, and then maybe, but to begin from a point of view of gratitude, because gratitude for me is a non-egoic emotion. The ego can't feel gratitude. It can feel pride and other things, it doesn't feel gratitude. So feeling gratitude in just a general way helps me step out of the ego mode. It sort of lubricates the process. And then to just drop in that question. It's an inquiry, it's not a question, it's not, I don't try to answer the question. The question then is, whatever the situation, is there another way of seeing this? And then let it go. It's a seed I drop into my consciousness. A seed, is there another way of seeing this? Sometimes the answer is there instantly. Sometimes it's there a day later or in a dream or something, but dropping in the seed and the answer comes as another way of seeing. It doesn't come as what to do. It comes as another way of seeing, and from that the doing unfolds. And let me just give you an example that happened several years ago when I was first playing with this. I sort of come to the conclusion this was how to work with things, and I've been inspired to some extent by A Course in Miracles. A Course in Miracles is very much about shifting the perception from the ego's mindset to God's point of view. And at the time, the person I was living with at the time, she wasn't behaving right. You know that one, your partner isn't behaving right. And I was in my office, and in this sort of like, and like we were sort of separated, and like she was doing some stuff in her room, and just this sort of tension. And I knew how she had to change. I knew exactly how she had to change. And she was probably knowing exactly how I had to change. And so I just sat back and I just closed my eyes and got in touch. And I just said to myself, is there another way of seeing this? And it was instant, half a second. Didn't take any, it just came straight bubbling out. Like, here is another human being struggling with her stuff, her issues, her past, having to deal with me and all my stuff, struggling to get through life, having her particular reaction. And it just, everything just softened. And it was just, and again, it was like, why hadn't I seen this before? Well, of course, the reason I hadn't seen it before, I was so stuck in how she had to change. And it was just, it's like love, the love returned. You know, we'd been out of love for a day or two, and suddenly, like, the love returned. And then, you know, what I had to do was instant, was that I just got up and walked in and just had a conversation, instead of keeping the door shut, because, yeah. That to me is prayer. Thank you. And it's time for dinner, lunch. Thank you. Thank you. And it's time for dinner, lunch. Thank you.